AI as a technology can take us down so many different paths. The answer to how do we ensure and support deep learning and support our teachers in a meaningful way, I don't think the answer has changed. The tools have changed.
Welcome to Learning Unboxed, a conversation about teaching, learning, and the future of work. I'm your host and chief goddess of the PASS Foundation, Annalise Corbin. We know the current model for education is obsolete. It was designed to create fleets of assembly line workers, not the thinkers and problem solvers needed today. We've seen the innovations that are possible within education, and it's our goal to leave the box behind and reimagine what education can look like in your own backyard. Welcome to today's episode of Learning Unboxed. As always, I'm excited to talk with another great innovator in the transformative education space. And joining us today is Ian Zhu, co-founder and CEO of SchoolJoy. So Ian, welcome to Learning Unboxed.
It's great to be here, Annalise. Thanks so much for having me.
Absolutely. I'm really excited for our conversation. And as we get started, a little bit of context for our listeners. We'll start with the SchoolJoy part, although we're going to talk about so much more than that, I have no doubt. But SchoolJoy is an AI-powered education management platform. It provides dynamically updated personal learning preference plans, as well as a comprehensive extended learning program management for any program type, after school, summer, you name it, workforce. And it has loaded with all kinds of great things that it can do, including thinking about skills and competencies and managing of all of that stuff. And so as we think about what an epic lift it is to build tools in the education space, Ian, I always like to start, especially when I meet folks that are founders in particular, I ask the question, what the heck were you thinking? Because being a founder is a lot of work and starting something new, it's a crazy thing, I know. So why, Ian, why did you feel compelled to do this?
There is a saying, Annalise, for founders and entrepreneurs, right? We do it not because it's easy, but because we thought it was going to be easy. And I think that's a recurring theme you probably see over and over again.
I definitely live and feel that, right? It's like, yeah. Oh, yeah, this is going to be nothing. It is so wrong, right?
You just go from idea to success, right? Just right. One straight path. What got me into education were just a lot of the combination of a lot of my own experiences. So I went to Cal, I was an econ major, and the hardest class that I thought I was going to take was econometrics, because I'm not a coder. You know, I was like, am I going to really have to write R and figure out these linear regressions? And, you know, that was going to destroy me. But at the same time, I was very involved with a student-led consulting organization called Net Impact, and we had a project with NatureBridge. It's a nonprofit based out in California where they bring kids out to national parks and teach academic concepts through that lens. I was able to take everything I learned in econometrics and apply it to that project every single day. And that's what helped me learn. It's also what helped me get through the class. So that really kind of really built the intuition around project-based learning and also what worked for me. I don't remember anything else I learned in any other class. And eventually I got into consulting where also I realized, hey, you know, these projects, I can learn pretty quickly through them. And while I was there at PwC, we had a project with a very large enterprise SaaS company. I had all of their certifications, but the skills I needed to succeed in that project was critical thinking, communication, and Excel. And so the certification really didn't really come to use that much. That also gave me the intuition that, hey, I think there are some gaps between certifications and the skills employees need on a day-to-day to be successful.
Yeah.
So, and then I went into enterprise software for a bit. And then when I turned 30, even though I look 20, when I turned 30, I said, I think I want to reimagine my life a little bit. You know, that's also when I started to realize I need to stop looking for joy in the future. I need to start looking for joy in the present. So I quit my job and I started a nonprofit. I did that for a year. That nonprofit was delivering hybrid PBL and SEL curriculum remotely during the height of the pandemic. Learned a lot, but it also became a lot harder than I realized. And then I thought, all right, maybe I'll go back to software, met a team, and here we are. So I'm in this, you know, I've done the nonprofit path, and now we've been working at the system for a bit over 3 years now. We just want things to work. We just want to put our heart and soul into what we believe, not to be our answer, but to be the culmination of all the amazing thought leaders and educators that we talk to every day. How do we bring their ideals and ideas to life with fidelity? And when we talk about AI, it's how do we make sure we do AI correctly?
Right.
You know, and that's a hard question, and it's a moving target too.
You know, I really appreciate that so much because it is, in fact, a moving target. And I, like you, my organization, you know, we have this conversation almost every day. A school, a teacher, one of our partners is talking about we don't know what to do about AI. How are you going to, you know, control it? That's my favorite. How are we going to control this thing? And I'm like, well, for starters, it's not new. Let's step back a little bit and reacquaint ourselves with what's really going on here. AI has been around for a long time. And in fact, you've been using it in your day-to-day life. You just didn't know it until ChatGPT came on the scene and said, oh, let's make this thing public, right? And then suddenly mainstream kind of got on board with this thing that's been around. And yet now it created a bit of a firestorm. I laugh about it. I'm like, okay, look, you know, the conversation we're having right now about AI, it's not really any different than that conversation we had decades ago when this little thing called the internet showed up and everybody freaked out about students getting all the answers from the internet. And I'm like, we survived the internet, right? And in fact, you use it every day in your teaching and learning, and good on you because we should be doing that. So yeah. I really appreciate that you're spending time, energy, and effort and thinking about doing this thing and doing it well and doing it right. So that gets me to my question, Ian, then. So there are lots of things you could have chosen to do and things that you could have chosen to build. So when you're out having the conversations with those school partners, why did you land on a platform that does X, Y, and Z? And so just explain to us a little bit about sort of the why this as opposed to something else. And then how do you feel like the functionality that you and your team have been really creative around the way that you've been doing the build, the design, the development, all that sort of stuff, actually get us to that endpoint, which is really your goal?
Yeah. You know, we want to start with something that's a lot more human. I think AI as a technology can take us down so many different paths. Ultimately, to your point earlier, I don't think what works in education has changed. The answer to how do we ensure and support deep learning and support our teachers in a meaningful way, I don't think the answer has changed. The tools have changed. Mm-hmm. But let's not get distracted by trying to answer what can AI do, but what can AI support in a more meaningful way? And let's not lose sight of the data that we still need to maintain. And I haven't, you know, we're trying really hard to, on our end, to be able to, our side, to be able to come up with studies and measurements. But gosh, like, how do we measure the impact of AI, right? So it's to take it back to the human level, it's to say, let's not start with a technology. That's the very last thing we should be talking about. How can we use a system to help our teachers get to know our kids? Not better, because I don't think as a system, we can necessarily replace the high quality interactions teachers can have with their kids every day, but maybe faster. So maybe before you even see the kids walk into your classroom on the first day of class, you already know where their hobbies are. You already know what are the different activities that they're passionate about, their interests, what their favorite foods are. As a new teacher or a teacher getting new kids, before they even walk in to have this information, how would that then affect or influence your practice? So, you know, that's our first starting point. And then, of course, we can build tools to streamline that lesson planning, instructional design, all of that. But it really starts with at least build a system that's not about AI, but to help our teachers can get to know their kids more quickly.
Mm-hmm. That is absolutely remarkable, Ian. And the fact that you and your team said, you know, that is going to be one of those big wins, right? Because one of the things that I know from my experience over almost 30 years of doing this work is that those relationships for kids mean so much. And, you know, as kids get further and further in school, you know, we get into high school in particular, the amount of time that we have with an individual teacher or a teacher with an individual student, because they've got so many on their docket in any given day, those relationships, they become more tenuous, I think, because of time factors and all this other sort of thing. So the fact that you're spending time, energy, and effort in saying that, you know, the investment in knowing is going to be so powerful.
Yeah, we want them to feel seen as human beings.
Yeah.
Isn't that what we want on a very deep level? When I was working on a nonprofit, we had a course called Songs for Humanity, where we brought together a phenomenal instructor, and we had kids write music and lyrics to connect songwriting to the issues that they care about. And one sixth grade student wrote about her experience with racism, and she still expressed a sense of optimism in her song. And that just floored me. My reaction was, how did these words come out of a body like that? And it also just gave me a very deep conviction that there's so much more to students beyond grades and test scores. And had it not been for this program, I would not have known that thing about that student and how she sees and feels and her experience in this world. And how can we help them if we don't know them at that level? So as a system, our responsibility is to say, we know how deep relationships should be formed. Let's not impact that. But let's give teachers the little nuggets that they can use to start these conversations, because a kid is not going to go walk into the classroom and start listing out all the different things on their resume, you know, all the different clubs that they have joined. It's hard enough to get how was your day out of them, right?
Right.
But if we can give teachers and empower them, at least with the information that can help them, whether it's for lesson planning or for relationship building, then as a system, as a technology system, then I'll say, yes, that's something that I think we should do. So that's the question that we constantly ask. What role can and should we play? And what are the things that we should not be doing? And be very clear about where learning should take place, where relationship building should be taking place, and then work backwards and say, how can we support that?
Are you ready to join the movement to revolutionize education? Stay tuned for the full unveiling of my forthcoming book, Hacking School, 5 Strategies to Link Learning to Life, where we'll dive deeper into these topics and unlock key strategies to educational transformation. If you want to stay in the know, sign up for notifications at pastfoundation.org/hackingschool.
So where does the initial data come from then, right? So, you know, before those kids walk in the room, are the kids sitting down and filling out something? Or how is the data itself? Like, how do I know that Ian loves flying kites more than anything else, right? Where does that come from?
Yeah, so a couple different sources. So we do have a 2-minute learning preference assessment that the students complete. So for a first-time student logging in, that's something that they see right away. We have a place for teachers to be able to log what we call moments. So our intuition was some teachers know a lot of information about some students, but not all teachers know everything about every student.
Right.
So how can we create a system where the teachers that do have a more concentrated set of information about these particular students, they should be able to have a place to log it. Then all the teachers that have this kid in their class can see that information as well.
Oh, so you're crowdsourcing to some extent the knowledge about an individual student. Okay, awesome.
And then there's also a place for kids to expand a learning system that you mentioned earlier. So action speaks louder than words, right? So we want to show how are the kids spending their time. And then we compile all of that information. We do use AI to operationalize it in some different ways, whether it's for teacher tools or for learning. But it really starts with everything that's not about the AI. How do we create a system that can capture the highest fidelity of data that can tell us who this kid is? And then we can build additional tools on top of it.
Okay. So now my next question, I'm putting my anthropology hat on, right? And I just got to push on this because I'm dying to really know. How does the system then deal with bias? Right. Because I don't know, you've probably experienced this, like, you know, you've got this kid who is an amazing kid, but is terribly underperforming and disruptive in math class because they can't figure out what that math has to do with them. Right. And it's better to fail than to be stupid. Right. You know, if you're putting on your adolescent sort of brain hat, but that math teacher only has that experience with that kid. And so they're inputting data into the system that says this kid's, you know, wickedly disruptive. But another teacher, right, has a completely different experience with that kid because they're creating an environment that the kid can find themselves in. How do you reconcile the humanity in the system in an equitable way. How do you do that? Because I don't know how to do that. How have you figured that out?
Annalise, even in the example you gave, that was biased from the teacher, from the human
right
system.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is super interesting. I'll need to come back to that.
Okay.
Because as you were asking me the question, the original answer I was going to give was, we need to fight bias with agency. We need to fight bias by redefining what success means. Agency meaning giving students a choice to be able to talk about who they are. And for them to say, use their own voice to express what they like. And that sets more guardrails around what AI can and cannot say. That we're not giving AI any demographic information. We're purely basing how we generate content based on the students' experiences. And that's more limited to what you would expect to see on the resume.
Mm-hmm.
So we do need to tread this very carefully. Our philosophy is always just to only use the data that's necessary,
mm-hmm.
but nothing more. So if it's about connecting algebra to a career that they may be interested in, or for some kids, career is way too far in the future, right? Or it could be just their favorite artist. Let's start there. So we want to start small. We want to start with the least amount of information possible. Thinking about potential bias from the teachers, I think all I can say at this point is transparency.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think the teacher can, you know, set the permission if they want something to be seen by students and parents, or if it's something that they just want other teachers to be able to see. I think there's going to be self-selection involved as well, because I don't think teachers will openly share. So I think that's something that I think we'll need to be observant about. But at least we can create a forum where everyone, every teacher can see at least how others view the student. And maybe that actually creates a conversation. Hey, what you wrote about this kid being disruptive, I actually didn't see that in my class.
Right.
So it's then our responsibility is to simply surface that information. But the solution, I think, is a lot more, you know, about the process and the human layer than the system level.
I don't disagree with it. There's a lot of nuance to it, right? And
yeah.
It is really interesting because I've bumped up against this. I can't tell you how many times, right? Every once in a while, you'll go someplace and you'll talk with an educator about, you know, some great program or some opportunity, right, within the community for their students. And every once in a while, you hear, well, you know, our kids can't do that. Well, that's not true. Right. But I hear that. Right. And, you know, those adults believe that. They're not just saying it. Right. So there's some of these ingrained sort of understandings or beliefs. And I do think you're correct. Right. The answer here is very, very nuanced. I love the opportunity, though, that you have put forward. That is that, you know, these adults can learn from other adults about different experiences being had with these individual kids.
Yeah.
Because at the end of the day, right, it goes back to, I would argue, there's so much to be said for the relationships that kids have with each others and with the adults in their world, right?
Yeah. One thing I learned about reading levels is maybe we open it up a little more so students can more easily demonstrate their mastery rather than being confined to the text that's only solely based on their current reading level. And that really just kind of helped form my understanding of, to your point, right? It's, we need more ways for students to be able to express who they are. So the other point around expanding the definition of success, I'm a firm believer in competencies with fidelity. So I think it breaks my heart when we start to define kids to say that kid is a C student or a B student or a 2.0 or 2.5 or 3.0. What if instead we can say that is a student that has demonstrated critical thinking where they were playing basketball? That's a student that has demonstrated compassion and work ethic when they worked on these projects. And we do have a way to make it really easy for teachers to be able to now tag, you know, these competencies and skills based on definition, but it's not about schooling the system. But what more can we do to let the kids know that they're actually good at something beyond perhaps the academic subjects? And then to be able to scale that in a systemic way to say, as a school, we also recognize that you have these skills. When I was in high school, I was pretty involved with Christian Club, and I would actually be giving sermons. I can't believe I'm giving this example here, you know. And then the educators I talked to, they said, Ian, you actually demonstrated, you know, a lot of the skills that you were needing in your English class,
mm-hmm.
public speaking, writing, researching. And I was like, I didn't even realize that before. And I did not know I had this thing called empathy until I started my first internship in college. It was my manager who told me, Ian, you actually have pretty high EQ. I was like, what's that? So how could I have gone to college in Berkeley not having known these are the some of the skill sets I had? You know, so what we can want, what we want to be able to do is to kind of let more students, even at a middle school level, to start developing the vocabulary to talk about who they are beyond their grades and test scores.
Yeah, I love that. I also like the fact that what we're partially talking about here is thinking about what is it that we actually need to learn right now, today, in 2024, and what should we aspire to be learning in 2030, 2035, so on, right? That is not what it used to be. You know, I always laugh. I had a really wonderful interaction years ago now with a Sugatamitra. And having him actually stand in front of a room, right, and take his experiment with a computer with a hole in the wall in India so far forward that he reaches into his own pocket, right, and he pulls out his cell phone and he holds it up high to the entire room. It's an auditorium packed with people there to hear him. And they're all educators of various and sundry from pre-K all the way through post-secondary. And he's like, why are you still teaching stuff that's in here?
Wow.
Yep. Right. He's like, we don't need to teach anything that is in this device any longer. Every kid has access in one form or another, some more. So there's ranges, obviously, to this. Why aren't we instead teaching them how to understand and evaluate what this knows and then what they can then go do with it themselves?
Yeah.
It's spot on, right?
Yeah. That, I feel that to my core.
Yeah,
I really do.
Me too.
Why are we not teaching semiconductors in middle school?
Right, exactly.
Mm-hmm. You know, I think we need to have more agility, mm-hmm. you know, because I can see challenges with adopting new concepts in the classroom. But even before that, I think we need more agility in our content and the curriculum, right? And whatever that means. Mm-hmm. And I think AI will accelerate that in a very, very meaningful way. You know, OpenAI has come out repeatedly saying we're trending towards PhD level knowledge, and it's approaching the cost of zero. So static knowledge will become more and more affordable, if not completely free to the world.
Right.
What does that mean to our education system, right? What defines now a textbook? What does that mean for, you know, our budget? So, you know, these are the things that we're actively exploring, mm-hmm. because we need to be prepared for it. If we don't take that trend as an assumption, if not a certainty, in the way we plan our conversations with the districts, then we could be left blindsided as well. That's a new territory for everybody. What does it mean for knowledge now to be free? You may allude to this earlier. Internet, in fact, yes, yeah. Internet is where you can Google knowledge anytime, anywhere you want. The form factor now is very different. And the ability for us to synthesize information for the individual human being is also now different. So the internet didn't really quite disrupt the industries that I think AI will, but I think there are definitely patterns that we can draw on.
Yeah, and you know, the other thing that I think that the moment that we find ourselves in now, I am hopeful that it is truly transformative in a way that we've talked about for decades in the world of education, but we have not seen it as reality. And I wonder if the moment that we're in now and the tools and the rate and pace of change of technology that's happening finally gets us to that space where we can, as a system and of institutions within that world of education, can let go finally of the idea that we have to teach content for the sake of teaching content. The real world is transdisciplinary at every moment of everything that we do all day long. And yet we penalize, I would argue, in many ways, you know, 12 to 13 years at minimum of our human lives, depending on where you are around the world from a time frame standpoint, to say, we're only going to teach you this for the sake of teaching you this, and we're only going to teach it for this moment. And then tomorrow we're going to turn the page or, you know, move the pacing guide forward, and we're only going to teach you this, and we may or may not ever connect the dots for you.
Yeah. And how do we do that for every student?
Yeah.
on a one-on-one basis, it makes sense for us to ask the student first, what matters to you? I think a great tutor, a great teacher does that every single day.
Yeah.
But then how do we scale that to a system? And I think we are as close to realizing that as ever before, both from the school joint perspective, and I also want to speak in part for the edtech industry as well. We also need to be very cautious and not overpromise. There's been some news, right, around different things that have happened with different edtech products and systems at certain districts. And for us, we want to err on the side of caution because we don't want future districts to say AI doesn't work. We're not going to adopt that technology. It's actually AI tools do not work. But we cannot discredit the underlying technology because if we somehow turn our head back against the technology itself, then you will only perpetuate more inequity. And that's my greatest fear and concern. So we're doing everything we can to do the right thing here. But AI is just so new that it's really easy to, again, to ask the wrong questions and answer the wrong questions and even, you know, more serious way, scale the wrong things. You know, it's a rocket ship. You know, anything you put on it, if you alter the angle just a little bit, if you scale the wrong thing, that can take us on a very different path.
Yeah, absolutely. You're right about that. You know, as I always try to think about the folks that are listening as we sort of wrap these conversations up, and the listeners, they're coming to us to Learning Inbox from all over the world with a lot of different perspectives, different access, different systems in play. But I'm really curious, Ian, given the journey that you've been on, and we've talked about, you know, lots of great things about the work that you're doing and the things that you're a bit concerned about. But what's that thing that's not quite here yet, but you know it's coming, that you're super excited about? And it could just be at the conceptual level, but like, what are you, Ian the guy, not Ian the co-founder, right? What are you really excited about?
I've yet to meet an educator that is totally against what we're doing. That gives me hope. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, our job first and foremost is create capacity for change. But I think change is going to come from the people. And what gives me hope is that we're meeting more and more teachers that are open to AI, that are open to innovation. So I think this is going to be more of a grassroots movement to say, you know, what does the collective voice mean when we come together and say, hey, this is how we want to be able to move forward in a meaningful way. What also gives me hope is that the science of learning, what we believe to be the essence of how an individual or human learn, I'm seeing a common thread across multiple states, if not countries. And that's exciting to me as well. You know, I'm always intrigued by this universal source of this nugget of truth that we ultimately can all pursue to say, yes, this is the answer. I'm not saying we or any other system necessarily has it, but that collective journey is also really meaningful. So these conversations that we are having today and also the many conversations that you have, I'm just excited to continue to see the thoughtful dialogue. And, you know, I think we're on the right track represented by these conversations. And I know we'll get there someday. And then when we get there, the goalpost is going to change again.
Yeah, so, as it should, right? So that we can keep moving forward in a positive way. Yeah, I absolutely agree with that. You know, Ian, I want to thank you so much for taking time out of your day to have a conversation and to share your experiences and your knowledge with all of us. I'm super excited. I do encourage any of our listeners, if you want to know more about School Joy, hop over to the website. You definitely Google it. It goes right there. It's really amazing the work that Ian and his team are doing. And so I would encourage all of you to at least go and take a look because, you know, if they can be helpful, I have no doubt that by reaching out to Ian, you will find the assistance you're looking for.
This was such a pleasure.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. Thank you for joining us for Learning Unboxed, a conversation about teaching, learning, and the future of work. I want to thank my guests and encourage you all to be part of the conversation. Meet me on social media at Annalise Corbin and join me next time as we stand up, step back, and lean in to reimagine education.